Well, thank you, Paul and Bonnie. Jerusalem, we were just there a few weeks ago. If you would turn to Psalm 122, Psalm 122, the famous verse embedded in it is verse 6, which says, "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper who love you." What's interesting is if you go back to verse 1, "I was glad when they said to me, 'Let us go up to the house of the Lord.' Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem." In verse 4, "Where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to the testimony of Israel, to give thanks to the name of the Lord." It seems to me that the composer meant in the song, "Jerusalem, the city of gold." To me, it's emblematic that God, in his very essence, is that city of gold. He's calling all people to himself. And it's, I could see why Teddy Kollek and the author wanted it. Jerusalem always has a special place once you've visited it. But I think it's a special place not because of perhaps just the physical. It's figurative because of what God is doing. It was his city. It intends to be his city, and the scriptures replete with it, a city of peace, something that is far from the case today. So today, my purpose is, I would like to offer the concept that what we read, think about, and do matters. As I rehearse lessons from this last feast, and I think the major lesson I come away with is how you judge and respond to what God is doing or perhaps not doing matters a lot to your soul. If you'll turn over with me to Psalm 107, in Psalm 107, we see a very interesting book, an interesting section of Scripture, where it begins, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever." This whole book is divided a little bit into sections. It has the lovely concept of peril. There's a danger. There is the concept of prayer, that people go to God because they see the peril. Then there's what you would see in this book, redemption. Redemption from God as he delivers people. And then you see a response from the people. The redeemed say something. The redeemed judge God right, loving, and kind. Notice how it says it in verse 43. At the conclusion of the matter, "Whoever is wise," Psalm 107, verse 43, "will observe these things, and they will understand the loving kindness of the Lord." They will understand the loving kindness of the Lord. So today I will go through some reflections on what I would like to entitle 5 days out of harm's way in Israel and Jordan, Feast of Tabernacles 2023. As we see the peril, we see the prayer, we see the redemption, and we respond according to, as God says, the people in verse 2, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." If you're redeemed, as John Velasquez says, you have to say something. "I'm leaving on Friday. I'm going to the Feast of Tabernacles." John is very articulate about that, I think, at his workplace. It'll be interesting the day he retires, whether they give him, you know, maybe they'll inscribe John, you know, 1 Peter 3:15 on your watch or something, because he seems to always say it so well, and they seem to keep asking him. You know, he doesn't seem to offend them too well. So today I'm going to put on my tour badge so that I remember what I'm talking about. So everybody in Israel, we had a tour badge, you know, my name, just in case I forget it, right? What bus I'm on and what group I'm a part of on the 6th. There's a lot of different organizations because we had different tours. And I put Valerie's badge on because she was with me. Of course, with me together, you can't do one without the other. You know, when you think about a movie, I was watching something the other night and I watched it all the way through, and then I was intrigued about who did what. You know, who did the lighting and who did the sound. And it's called credits, right? You know, at the end of the movie, there's all these people, everybody from gaffers. Did you ever see that one that says first gaffer or first electrician or runner? You know what I mean? Everybody seems to get their name in there. Well, I think, you know, as I would describe this, I would like to make sure that at the outset, I would say that a big thank you to all of you who prayed for the group in Israel. Those prayers were answered. I believe James 5:16, which I think you all do as well. But James 5, verse 16, if you haven't looked at it in a while, you practice it. So I thought maybe we should read it. It says, confess your trespasses one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man and woman avails much. I think we felt it. You know, when you've had somebody pray for you, you felt it. And that's one of my movie credits, is that God gets the credit, but the people who pray also get the credit because they went and redeemed God, the saving one, redeemed, that God can do the redemption, that God can deliver, perhaps where we know human minds and hearts can't. I would also be remiss if I did not, in absentia, thank people. Stephanie's gone, so she was the only other member of the Higgins were on the tour from Orange County as well. But thank you to the faithful members on the tour who continued with smiles and graciousness. They would come up and say, thank you for all you're doing. We're praying for the situation. And they had just an incredible sense of calm that was God-given, I feel. You know what I mean? We didn't have people panicking in the aisles. You know what I mean? I need off the bus and I need now. you know, you can see, you know, there were no two-year-old temper tantrums, which was really wonderful. A third credit quickly would go to Jackie and Charles Malier, who the festival coordinators. We've worked with them in the past, and we have come to a very good division of duties. And Charles handles all the church aspects, and we handle all the other physical arrangements and things. And we just, Charles, of course, is very, some of the elders and people, I see John Garnett and others who know Charles well, very, very humble guy and very self-effacing, always having the right dry humor at the right time, even if he has to tell everybody to laugh at the joke. But he's very good. So we worked well together, and we were blessed to, I think, keep a certain good calm among the group. Another scripture, as I talk about lessons, is Luke 8. Luke 8, it's actually Luke 18, sorry. You've got to add 10 to something there. To Luke 18. Luke 18, verse 1. Then he, Jesus, spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. The point and objective of prayer, going and judging God is capable of God as loving, full of loving kindness, and that his mercy will endure forever, is your heart is not lost. I don't know about you, I heard the song of Jerusalem of Gold today, and I'm sitting here going, okay, it's a little tough to leave Israel. People you know who don't get to leave. You know, I don't know about you, but you open up the paper this morning, or we realize there's crisis, and a crisis around the world, and not just in Israel and Gaza, but Ukraine and other places. And if you're not careful, we all lose heart, right? We go, and I think that, face it, I think we're all sad days, some days. You know what I mean? The older we get, the more we wish, couldn't we all just get along, Rodney King would say. Well, that's why ideas, thoughts, and actions matter. We can see what's happened in the world. People believe certain things. They read certain things. They believe certain things. And then they begin to do certain things. You can't unconnect thoughts and ideas and concepts with action, because before action becomes thoughts, becomes ideas, many times bad ideas. And so, as John Velasquez was saying with respect to salt and light, we're supposed to be the ones who know that God is right and just, and we do not lose heart. We have to ask him not to lose heart, because some days we're a little sad. The other individual I'd like to thank and give a credit to in this reflections is my wife, because, you know, every morning before we leave the hotel room, it's her hand that's there, shall we pray for the day? And I have to tell you that, you know, we've been together and done a lot of things for a lot of years, a lot of programs, a lot of projects, and I've come to, so to speak, expect, and I've come to appreciate the us that's in each of us, because without her, I'm not effective. Without me, she's not effective. And we seem to fall into a great place of us. But in this case, the ability for her not to waver was critical. Because together, as I read the notes that come back from the members who say certain things, and they say, well, thank you for this, thank you for this, and you allowed us to remain calm. You allowed us to, you know, still get the most out of the experience. And I'm like, okay. That was our job. Our job was to make it look easy. Our job was to make it, you know, okay for them. And I'm glad God blessed that. But he blessed it because Valerie was with me. Every step of the way, every tick and tack of every list, as we are up and down on the bus and not on the bus, and, you know, a text message, where are you? We're ready. The bus is ready. And I'm over in bus 3, and I need to be in bus 2 and solving something anyway. So she truly has been, as all of us who have wonderful wives can attest, a great blessing. Without us, there would be no us. As I get into this message, I'm reminded we live in a golden age. And perhaps you've heard me say before, never before in human history have we been able to fly so far, so fast, and so predictably safe. And that's because of one thing. And that is when every person in the supply chain of making the jet, of designing the information, designing this technology, of the air traffic controllers, of the people who put fuel in the plane, the people who do the measurements, the people who fly, all of them do their job the right way when it's their turn. And that is a lesson I see from the feast and the challenge that can be in life and the challenge we have with the world. When it was certain people's chance, they do and say the wrong thing, and the world and all things interrupt, right? When it's our turn, we have to do the right thing. You know, we see this in music really well. You know, I'm around band choirs and orchestras and helping them go places and be things. And one of the neat things about, you know, going with a music director on a tour is I always joke, I have one client. It's the band director, the choir director. And we can talk about things, and they turn around and say, okay, we're doing this. And the kids don't know what we were going to do, but now we're doing this. But they all do the right thing. And first, you know, the percussionists are putting instruments on the bus, and these people are doing this, and there's this organization. And they learn this. They learn that, guess what? B flat's B flat, and everybody's got to play at the same time, at the same way. I don't know about you, but I mean, we always joke. You get a band director started, and they really start into this, you know, talk about, you know, they come back about why there's not a bell curve in the band or choir, okay? And band director. So I have a friend, Charlie Brody. He was band director for 37 years. And Charlie was having a little tit-to-tat with the president of the school. And so he says, would you come by tomorrow? Come to band tomorrow. So he comes, the president comes by, and he says, so you think that everybody in my class does not deserve an A? He says, yeah, that's right. He says, just wanted to make sure. He says, so if I have 2% of the people play a bad note, that's kind of okay. So he had the band, and he had predetermined, oh, these guys get to play the bad note. The guy's wincing. He says, no, that's 2%. He says, you want to hear 6%? You know, so Charlie went on to 10%. Right? And 10%, he's like, all right, I get it. Whatever you give me, they're the grades, I'll accept. Forget the bell curve. Guess what? A band, a choir, a piece of music like we heard today. You know, what if Paul played 5% of the notes wrong? What if the conclusion, you know, when he went to that last chord, what if he just ruined a piece, right, Paul? You know, what if Bonnie was 3 steps off in her, or not tempo? It's got to be right. And this is what I think we see from the Bible, too, is, you know, there's a great verse out of Matthew chapter, since I'm there mentally, I'll take us there. It's the beginning of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, Matthew 6, verse 9, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Valerie listened to a great podcast the other day, and I think they made a great point. You know, sometimes we think about, everything's about all, everybody, you know, in the Christian world getting to heaven. Well, God's point is, really, no, my will, the point we're getting to is my will is going to be done on earth, in your community, in mine. That's what we're after. We're after all people, everywhere, doing God's purpose, will, and loving kindness there, here, on earth. It's not about something else in someplace else. So, today, as I talk about the perils and the prayers and the redemption, I'd like to give you a little background, just briefly, to the festival tour. We actually began planning the festival tour for the United Church of God in 2018. The church originally wanted to do the tour in 2019, and I said, no, I can't get the hotel rooms that you want in 2019 because of the Feast of Tabernacles. Why? Deuteronomy 16:16, 3 times in a year. Your people shall go up before the Lord. And guess what? All the Jews throughout the diaspora go up. Jerusalem does not need group tours. You go into any tour brochure around the world, okay? Try to look for a Holy Land tour across the Feast of Tabernacles. It doesn't exist because they can't buy the hotel rooms. And so you've got to go to the hotels with some cash in hand and convince them that you want these hotel rooms and you want them, you know, not in a side hotel. You want them in the good side of Jerusalem, you know. And so we did. And by March, of course, we had a lot of sign-ups. We had 240 people wanting to go late 2018 for the 2020 feast. Well, of course, we all know what happened in March of 2020, okay? Some little bug out of Asia, you know, gets spread around the world, virus, so COVID. And so, you know, a number of people backed out, and we were able to, of course, refund their money and everything. But by late 2022, 2023, the tour was back on for 2023. And in the meantime, we kind of postponed it a couple times. But I don't really remember those. I don't remember moving it to 21 and 22 because it all happened within weeks because it was clear it wasn't going to work. But so this year, we ended up with 178 people. That's 4 buses. In the tourism industry, you have to realize a large group is 42, okay? An ultra-large group might be 60. So 178 with 4 coaches in Israel is a pretty good undertaking. Everything began right before Atonement with people coming in. And most people, we had about 50, 60 people in country for Atonement in 2 days when they went to Bethlehem and another side tour to Nazareth. And then the main feast tour began on September 27th, which would be an 11-night program with a post-program into Jordan for 3 nights. And about 50 people were going to go home at the end of the feast, and the other 140 or so were going to stay and do the 3-day in Jordan. So one of the good things over the years, you know, I've had the great opportunity to work with some great tour operators, and they're that really came home in spades because we had great support throughout this program. And I mean, the itinerary is very extensive. I mean, we go from Tel Aviv up the coast to Caesarea Maritima, if you're looking at the map, and see Carmel and Megiddo over the Sea of Galilee and see Tiberias and go to Hazor. where the city was burned by the Israelites, up to Tel Dan. Tel Dan, you know, right there where the altar was. We know where the altar was. There's an iron replica of it. We always joke when we sit there and we talk about it. Well, we're not having a religious service here. We're only doing a Bible study. We don't want to be worshiping in Dan, right? Because it was the wrong capital. There's also a 3,200-year-old stone gate in the side of the city walls of Dan. Incredible piece of archaeological find. On up into Benias, Caesarea Philippi, and then back down to Mount of Beatitudes, Sea of Galilee, Capernaum. And Magdala, all wonderful sites to see, and on into Jerusalem, where we get to see, of course, the Dead Sea Scrolls at the museum in Israel, the Israel Museum in Jerusalem, the Old City. We got on the Temple Mount this year. My two most intrepid days on a tour in Israel are in the past. Ask me after the sermon what I think they are. But in the past were the day we do the Temple Mount, because we have to go on the Temple Mount, and we want to be on the Temple Mount, but sometimes religious zealots, as in Jewish religious zealots, get on the Temple Mount, and now they want to pray, and they want to offer prayers, and of course the Muslim walk, who actually control the Temple Mount, the Jordanians, don't like that, and so now you've got a clash between the Israeli and the police and the walk who control the Temple Mount, and you're going to try to escort this guy, which we saw this year, a guy being kind of escorted off the Temple Mount. But sometimes in years past, if there's going to be any little protest, often it happens in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount, and now you have a clash. And so as we go up the ramp onto the Temple Mount, on that ramp, the wooden structure that gets us up on, is that's where the Jerusalem and Israeli Ministry of Tourism police force is. They're just sitting. You walk amongst them to get up on the Temple Mount, and then the Arab forces, the Jordanian forces, are on top. But the Israeli forces will storm the Temple Mount if they need to. So they're there with their shock grenades on their vests and stuff. So everybody else is busy taking pictures and looking down at the Western Wall, and I'm thinking, okay, I just want the whole group through this thing. See, when you see guns, you know, in the tour business, they don't really mix, okay? I like to go by them, past them, and then on to lunch, right? On to lovely things, okay? On to excavations and archaeology. It's nice to take people to archaeological finds, right? There's nothing to fear except trip and falls, and, you know, you can kind of fix those. So anyway, all right. So now that takes us all the way through the tour. The feasts have been wonderful. We have the old and young alike. I can tell you stories about the everybody from the guy who drags an empty suitcase along on the tour and other things. So you've got all kind of wonderful things. We have, some people in the room will know Mr. Chalkesky. Donna and Steve Hall know the Chalkeskys from summer camp and SEP Orr. Mr. Chalkesky's 91. His daughter, Marlette, took him on the tour. He had really wanted to go. He had been into the tour back in 2020, and so we kept talking. She says, "Do you think Dad can make it?" And I said, "Well, Marlette and I would have these conversations." I said, "Okay, here's what, Marlette. You just have to say, okay, if he's tired one day, it's okay. We can just sit down. But you always have my ear. It'll be okay. We'll get him through. It's a lifelong goal, so we'll get them through." And so that we did, and so it was really wonderful to see him see a lifetime dream. And so, of course, on Saturday, the 7th of October, which is the 8th day of the feast, I get a text from one of the field teams from the tour company. It says, "Frank, if you hear the sirens, don't use the elevator." I go, "Well, we've been doing a lot of things. You know, how many for lunch? How many people were on bus 3? I mean, the text messages all week long are on all kinds of things. But what? Or I say, "See Monica here. Hi, Monica. I forgot Monica was on the tour, you know." So she can tell you what all these reflections are. So anyway, so I find out from Rotem and Tarla, I open the window. "Hear that siren? See like that?" Well, the siren in Jerusalem was not that loud that day, because we had double pane windows, and I didn't really, that's quite loud. I would have noticed that. Okay, I didn't notice the other one. And that's even louder. But those of you on Zoom, the fire truck's going by. You know, hopefully it's just one, not a parade of them. It's almost gone. It's almost gone. Yeah, it went. It went up the street. Okay. That's their route. Anyway, so we soon realized that, of course, Jerusalem was now on an orange alert. We did open the window and hear kasaboom a couple times from the Iron Dome that was protecting Jerusalem. And most of the time in the news media, we realized that the Iron Dome protects Tel Aviv, because that's usually where the rockets go up the coast from Gaza to Tel Aviv. But to come, have them come in Jerusalem is a little unique, okay? And you soon realize the staffs and everybody were a little more concerned than they would normally. And now with an orange alert, of course, in Jerusalem, groups of 50 cannot gather or meet or go outside. And if you have a... If you hear the sirens, you're supposed to take cover. So our lovely, now we'll see if, well, I'll say this, and we'll see if Ole was told this story. But his daughter, Stephanie, who's now moved east, okay, was out for a morning, early Sabbath morning walk. And she's out there, and up pulls this cab driver and says, "What are you doing out here?" She goes, "Oh, just enjoying the quiet streets." He says, "Well, there's nobody on the streets because the siren's going off, and you're supposed to take cover. Where's the hotel are you? And I'll take you there right now." So Stephanie realized, oh, things were not exactly normal. So anyway, so within short order, I think we see the need to pray for wisdom and care, and that the day was not going to be like what we had planned. As we go down to breakfast, Valerie and I were talking about, well, you know, who are the other people we need to gather for wisdom? Both we were talking to, of course, Charles and Jackie. And then I pulled Matt King aside, who you all know, and I said, "Hey, Matt, I don't know what's coming, but we may need a little a brain think, you know what I mean? So just, you know, if I ask for," he said, "Oh, yeah, I'm in. And I see Mike Cook from Ohio, and Mike says, "Oh, yeah, whatever you need." Because what's the scripture says? The scripture says in Proverbs 15, so you're talking about lessons. You're talking about how do you sometimes escape peril. You have to have ways in which God can bless you. Proverbs 15, verse 22, it says, "Without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established." And so while we had to do no major, you know, brainstorming sessions or whatever, I look back is that I opened the door, because now both of them knew that they had my ear and Charles's ear, and we could say, "Hey, what about this idea, or have you considered this?" And I thought that was a critical thing as we were all working along. You know, Philippians 2, something that we did that morning that we only realized after we began to do it was so impactful to others, was Philippians 2, verse 3. It says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let's each esteem others better than themselves. And so as soon as I saw the field team, the two ladies who we had with the tour company who were with us all the time, we had the guides, and drivers, so we had four guides, and everybody stayed on the same bus each time so they get used to the guides. We had a wonderful match of guides. Gila from the tour company at Eshet did a wonderful job. We had Doran on bus one, which has a PhD, and we put all the intellectuals on that bus, and it seemed to really go well. Bus two was Idan, who was he's just a real fighter of a guy. Grew up in a kibbutz, grew up in communal living, as in they took him, his parents let him in the nursery, and they had no real mothers or fathers, and kids are raised by the collective, you know what I mean? And he just very interesting, but a real passion with his master's in archaeology, and does a lot of programs. So that worked pretty good with our bus. And then we had bus three, who we had a younger guy, not Doran, yeah. Idan and Oban. Yeah. Anyway, he works a lot with college educators, so we probably put all the younger people over there. They all had a wonderful time. We had Joram, who was about 73, the older guide who was with the older people bus. And which really all worked really, really well, I thought. And it was just a wonderful mix. But when we went downstairs that morning on Sabbath, the eighth day of the feast, when I saw Rotem and Tarla from the Eshet team, first thing I said was, well, how's your family? And Tarla says, well, my mother's 83. She's in the north. She's okay. She's scared this morning. And I said, well, do you need to go to her? She goes, no, my sister will go to her. And so that told me that things were much different than perhaps what the news media and everybody were saying, because everything's limited. And Rotem has family in New Jersey, so she didn't have anybody in immediate harm's way at the time. But then as we went through the morning, going in, the maitre d' says, oh, good morning, da-da-da. I says, well, how's your family? It goes a long way when you say, hey, how I realize you're in crisis as well as we are, right? And that, you know, puts things in a good perspective. I think it's just esteeming others always helps you along the way. We had to move services that day from a room that had windows. We never really opened the windows in the first floor because the curtains and the glare, but we moved downstairs to a room that was more protected, and that was good. And, you know, as we're doing that, and the hotel was very gracious about that, so we opened a room, and we had everybody's around the round tables for church, et cetera. And all of a sudden, I realized I had to go out and check on things. Well, the lower lobby outside this room has got people. Well, the hotel had made everybody in the hotel evacuate the rooms and mandatory come down to this lower lobby, and they're sitting on the floors, et cetera. And so I said to the Eshet team, I says, well, wait a minute. I feel a little bad. You got old people sitting out here, and we're sitting in all the comfy chairs in here having church, and don't we need some of those chairs out there? And she says to me, she goes, oh, well, Frank. She goes, the hotel is trying to bide their time. They have special spaces. They have special protective shelters underground. They just don't want to open them yet. They're trying to see if they don't have to open them, because they would have to clean them after they open to make sure. She says, so let it sit a little bit. Thank you for being, you know, caring about it, but we'll see how they go. I thought, okay, fine. But once again, you're trying to be aware of these things. We had to move. We were all going to have disperse and go out for lunch. That couldn't happen. There was a whole huge discussion and negotiation with the hotel and the tour company about how they were going to offer lunch and how they were not going to offer lunch. And okay, fine. I mean, I don't know about you, but if you have so much food in the fridge, right? Well, the same is true for a hotel. And all of a sudden, 178 people want lunch. Do you have enough food in the fridge, right? Do you have enough bread? I mean, well, I just want cold cut sandwiches. Well, maybe we don't have that much bread, right? Anyway, so there's the practicality of that, and then there's of course, the fiscal side of that, where they think they want to charge a certain number. So that was really, that was an interesting little repartee that took a whole series of text. And Israel all uses WhatsApp, by the way. So they're always, it had all these various groups of WhatsApps going, and I thought I'd segue a moment to say what were members feeling, and Monica can tell you her reflections, and you've heard some, but I know Scott McKeon wrote me that he felt that amidst the volatility and uncertainty, he felt calm, and I think that's an answer to prayer. Anita Kilgore in Australia said, through the team's efforts, we were all able to remain calm and felt assured that we were safe. All the while, throughout the day, on the eighth day, people's flights are being delayed. So the people who are later in the week, they weren't leaving till the 11th, okay? So those flights really weren't of concern yet. But people who were leaving the next day, on the 8th, about 50 people, all of a sudden they're getting their text messages. They're getting their emails. Flight delayed, flight moved, flight canceled. Okay, so now the whole lovely plan that we had of individual transfers to the airport and escorts, that whole plan that was all in this book, this planning book, the Bible for the thing, the chart, et cetera, all of that, of course, goes away. So now we have to have a new plan, and every one of those has to be changed. When you change something in travel, I often liken it to a ball of string, and when you cut that ball of string, every piece needs tied back together, okay? And needless to say, you never get them all tied back together. You know, you've spent all this time winding up the string, and then it's gone. So, as we begin to do this, I thought of something else, which is Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3, verse 6. So when I think of transportation, and I think of all these things that are going on. Proverbs 3, verse 6. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. And I felt that the membership as a whole really lived this out, that they were acknowledging God, they were praying for safety, they were praying for things to go so that they could go out and get home, that we could finish out the day. And that happened. They acknowledged God. And, you know, I think I wrote in the letter 2 weeks ago to you in the intro how the two field team who were with us from the tour company loved to come in the morning because we would start church and they would have songs. And they always came in for the three sets of hymns. They said, she goes, I knew, she goes, there's a source for why everybody was so happy every day. She goes, if you start the day with prayer and singing, she goes, it must just lift the soul. And so they acknowledge that wonderful thing. So, but I was hearkening to the real practical effects of the Talmud and the Mishnah. Mr. Garnett made a great comment about them last week, and I thought he would enjoy this. So we're going to have the final dinner out at a lovely restaurant, which was not too far from the hotel. But, of course, we're not allowed to go to that restaurant. I mean, it's really, it was only a number of blocks away. And so, and what's interesting, by the way, and FYI, is that in Israel, the Department of Defense, Israeli Defense Force, has a tourism section. So all the tour operators know this number, know the people on it. They can call. What are we allowed to do? What are we not allowed to do? Okay? I mean, you don't have that in the United States, right? If I have a group in for the Rose Parade, okay, and I need to reach Homeland Security, good luck. I mean, we're not on their radar screen. Tourism is not on U.S. security forces' radar screens in that way. But Israel, it's a huge piece of the GDP. And so they have a line. Well, they were calling, oh, can we do that? Look, it's only a few blocks away. Can't we move them over small groups at a time? And no, you cannot do that. That restaurant does not have authorization to have more than 50 people in it, blah, 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 blah. I mean, all this is going back and forth. And they're trying. I said, okay, fine. So then finally the idea was, well, if half the food's cooked, it's bought, everything, why don't we just bring the food to the hotel? Okay? And you know what it boiled down to? It boiled down to every hotel who's an observant hotel in Israel has what I will call the kosher czar. Okay? This person's job is to make sure the hotel is totally kosher compliant. Okay? And there's a huge piece of their business weekly. The people come in and they move into the hotel for Friday night and Sabbath, Shabbat. Okay? They have their food, their shelter there. And this is big, big money to an observant hotel in Israel. Huge. And so the person who has more say in a hotel, who cannot be overridden by even the general manager, is I call the kosher czar. So the kosher czar says the kosher food prepared in that restaurant cannot come in the hotel because it's not our kosher. A total ridiculous, it's a full blown, right, John, explanation of Talmud and Mishnah. All our laws make us holy, righteous people. What makes us holy and righteous? God's Spirit, Jesus Christ. It's an incredible lesson to watch what happens. And I ponder as I say that, and I hope and I think, as you heard so eloquently put with John Velasquez's message, sometimes do we relish our oddness and differentness? And in the process, shadow the power of what God has really done in our life through Jesus Christ. A ponder, a reflection. Now, I offer this other challenge we had, is that all the hotel staff in Israel, especially in Jerusalem, is Arab and Palestinian. Okay, there are very few Jews working in hotels in Jerusalem. So now, on this day, we have a crisis point. Okay, because once you go to Orange Alert, the border that's around East Jerusalem, that borders the West Bank, the part of the Israel that sits north of Jerusalem, this is called the West Bank. It's West Bank. Why? Because it's west of the Jordan River, right? That's why they call it the West Bank. But it's all this central territory in the middle of Israel. If you look up a map, you can see it. And as you do this, a lot of these workers live in the West Bank. Some work in East Jerusalem, like our bus driver number one, Beruti, and others live in the West Bank. So under Orange Alert, the border is now sealed. Okay? Meaning these workers, if they go home, they don't come back. And if you're the hospital, I mean, if you're the hotel management staff, you go, you can't leave. Why? Because if the chef goes, there's no chef to replace him, right? If the housekeepers go, there's no housekeepers to replace them. The shift is not changing. So as we're working all these things through, you begin to realize that everybody's getting pretty tired, okay? The kitchen staff cooked two big meals that they weren't intending to cook, okay? And then so we're working on all these changes of transfers, and Valerie and Rotem and Tarla and I are sitting beside the bar at a table, and all of a sudden there's this huge, huge, violent, just violent screaming from behind the bar in the back room. And all of a sudden, here comes the rest of the wait staff from the dining room, and they go in and they settle this guy down. Well, he was just overwrought, right? He was overwrought with the fact that he can't go home. Where's his family doing? He's, you know, wherever he is. Does he side with the Palestinian cause? I don't know, whatever. So anyway, his buddies were trying to calm him down. But, I mean, he was just really, I mean, you can't imagine the tone and the tenor of this man's voice. So you realize, okay, you know, things are not, you know, exactly according to Hoyle. So before it's over, where a number of people had lost flights out and weren't going to go, Delta, especially Delta, had postponed service. So now we had people coming to me, can I go to Jordan with you? Can I go to Jordan with you tomorrow? Because if I'm going to have to sit in Jerusalem for 3 days, I might as well go with you to Jordan, right? Okay, it's fine. So we're adding people. And as I add people, I text back to the tour company representative, and I say, Tanya, can we add another two? Yes. She goes, it'll be a few minutes. I can't email Jordan right now. I go, okay, I'm listening. The next text is, just ran to the shelter in Tel Aviv. Why? Every time the bomb comes off and comes out of Gaza, the alert comes on their phone and on their TVs. It's very integrated. It says, take shelter. So she's trying to help us redo the tour while she's in the bomb shelter. In and out. All night long. A little cute side note, because and it's how you begin to work with people in a really good way. So we had all these transfers arranged, and I don't know, some of you may remember Kathy Lewis. She worked in the registrar here in Pasadena for years, and her mother is Jackie Lewis, and Jackie's from Oklahoma. Just a lovely, lovely older lady. She's 87. And so we had this transfer out early in the morning, and she was going to be a part of a group of seven or eight to the airport, and that was all going to be good and everything. And all of a sudden, all these transfers changed. And Valerie and Rotem and Tarla and I are going down the list, and all of a sudden, we all look at each other and go, Jackie Lewis, by herself. And I think it was Rotem or Tarla looked at me and said, she says, you mean that little old lady, the old one, who's so sweet? She can't go to the airport by herself. And so now we're, okay, fine. We got to fix Jackie. So it's cute. I mean, and that's genuine care from people, which is something that I think John was saying. You know, how do we answer people with gentleness and fear, with respect and kindness for what the power of God can do in their lives, right? And it's wonderful to watch your approach, your focus, and expressions help others help you. You know, as we felt the evening go along, all of our guides are Jewish on the tour, and all of the bus drivers are Arabs. And one was a Christian Arab, the others were Muslim Arabs. And so they come to dinner with us on the final night, because we usually give them their thank you gratuity, etc. And the group was, but, and so We had a pretty upbeat dinner, except for you could tell by the time they arrived to dinner, they had understood perhaps the gravity of what had happened on October 7th more than the press and the rest of us, because they now are getting reports. This person's lost. This person's lost. And I think I mentioned it last week or 2 weeks ago. The impact number, okay, for us to understand that 1,400 people died on October 7th through this attack in Israel would be like on 9/11, the United States had a population of 285 million. It would equal on 9/11 in one 24-hour period losing 50,000 people. Okay. So I say that because everybody in the news media run to a different conclusion perhaps right now. But let me tell you, I think I hearken back to 9/11. If we had lost 50,000 people in one day, the reply from the United States would not have been to a plan, a attack 12 months later in Afghanistan. If you want to understand how galvanized, how shocked the Israeli population is, that's the gravity. Okay, that is, I mean, I don't even think it really imports what it means to the Israeli psyche. So as we moved to move people out, I mean, even that evening on the 7th, we had seven people, the first run out to the airport. The Waterhouses, who many people know, Roy, Michelle, and their son Kendall and his wife is, oh, I forgot her name. Anyway, they went to the airport, and their flight was about 11:30. And so they're at the airport, it's 8:30, 9 o'clock, and all of a sudden there's a bomb alert at the airport, not inside the airport, meaning a rocket coming in. So the whole main lobby, the airport is, you know, cleared, and all of a sudden we get Michelle's mother, Arnie Hopkins, comes over to us, and she goes, "Michelle just texted me from the airport." She goes, and it says, "Mom, we're in stairwell 12. They cleared the airport, but now the door's locked, and we can't get back in to the check-in process." And so Rotem is with us from the Esha team, and she goes, "Okay, I know the smile, the security escort people." She gets on the horn to them and says, "Stairwell 12, can you imagine it's happening at LAX?" And so they go over, they get them out, they get them back in line, they get checked in. Okay, now they can resume their check-in process. But that's how, you know, you're beginning to see what's happening and not happening. Okay, this is rather, things are moving, and you realize things are not necessarily even going well at the airport. The Higgins from Orange County, they came back. Their flight from Turkish was, quote, delayed for 10 hours till the morning. They came back to the hotel. We got them back in. And so, you know, anyway, things just keep moving along. And by Sunday, we had, I would say, only about 60% of the people who left on time on the 8th, on Sunday the 8th. And so we see all this, everything's a movement in foot. And by that evening, there's a nice little tale to tell about all these, even though in the midst of these delays. We had the Molden family of six, mother and dad, and three teenage boys, like 16, 15, 13, something like that, and little Lily, who's 11. Just a delightful family. And I was checking on them whether they had got onto the plane, because earlier in the day, Lufthansa had moved them out to Thursday. And she goes, "Well, do I have to accept that?" I said, "No, call the U.S. number, call them, say, hey, I want rebooked." So they got a rebooked. They actually had them on Al Al somehow. And so I was checking to make sure that they were all checked in. And she goes, "We're moving along. All things are going pretty good. We're checking. This is about, 8 o'clock Sunday night." And I said, "Oh, great." And I made an observation to her, because I realized the kids, you know, we're all accepting this in one way. How are kids taking all this in? And I wrote to her, I says, "Well, I'll write to the group as a whole, and as I know you are, please make sure your children see God's great hand in protecting us and the favor in getting home. While we may have certain experience in travel, let no one infer that mere human minds and hearts have delivered us all." And she writes back, "Thank you very much." Which made me think of Psalm 115. Our job as believers is to remind ourselves and others, Psalm 115, verse 9, "O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield." As the psalmist says, 115, the great halal, "Then the house of Aaron would say, trust in the Lord. And the house of Aaron would reply, he is their help and their shield. And then all who fear the Lord, who trust in the Lord, would say, he is their help and he is their shield." There are some days in life when you see that more poignantly than others. A little postscript is, as the evening was going on, about 11:09, Mrs. Molden writes and says, we are all checked in. Thanks for checking on us. We're praying that all good and make it onto the plane. Our seats are scattered, but as long as one of us can sit with Lily, that'll be okay. Praying you have a safe trip to Jordan. And then 12:52, she writes, we're on the plane, and we got two seats together, so we're good. Answered prayer. In the midst of all the chaos, God made sure 11-year-old Lily got to sit with a family member. You know, there were other texts. I can see them by the dozens, you know, of everybody reminding everybody to take care, that God can protect us and bless us. They were answered over and over again. As Anita Kilgore wrote from Australia, she said, God's hands were definitely working on our behalf. I thought that was a lovely thought. Sunday the 8th, we woke up to trying to figure out how we were going to handle the Jordan departure. And I have to say, it was quite surreal. All three buses of us leaving the hotel, going out the road and down over to Jericho, through the West Bank and to the Jordan River Valley. We were a little quiet. You realized you were leaving a situation, you know what I mean? And we went down along the Dead Sea, where it was safe, and all the way to the Eilat, the Red Sea, all the way down to the bottom to cross the border. And Valerie and I get on the bus, and we're ticking and tacking off lists. And then we realized what all was happening with all these flights, and the flights were being delayed, and which meant what? If you couldn't get 60% of the 50 out on the 8th, what's the likelihood of these other 130 people getting out reasonably on time at the end of the Jordan program? And then I realized quickly, I said, well, okay, if those people who are not flying on El Al, Lufthansa, American, Delta, whatever, are going to be delayed, they're going to be delayed in Tel Aviv, and then where do they sleep and where do they go? And so, but now I've got a time window happening, because we're going to cross the border at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we've got about 3 hours left. And if we're going to change flights for those people, they need to do it now. Because the moment we cross the border into Jordan, cell service is toast. I don't care what plan you have. I don't care what SIM card you have. It is just weak at best, intermittent. Text don't, it just doesn't work. So we got on the phone to all three other buses, and we said, look, if you're on any airline other than El Al, change your flights. We'll take you out of Amman, do it after midnight on this day, and so everybody begins to work. And then we get into the lovely border crossing. Border crossings are a tour director's trial patience, okay? Because we were going to just take hand-carry luggage to make it easier to go across the border, because the border at Eilat. Okay, this is not, you know, how many of you go to Arizona sometimes and you come back and the guy goes and he's looking for fruit? They just wave you through, right? And there's a little line, a little delay, okay? The border in Eilat, like any border in Israel and Jordan, okay, consists of an exit point, as in scan exit, so we know you came in the country and now we know you left the country. And then you walk across 100 yards between this set of barbed wire that's 16 feet tall, on the pavement to the set of barbed wire on that side 100 yards away, okay, and you go through, wouldn't you know it, their duty-free shop. It's really cute. And we walk through the air conditioning. I mean, you're out in the heat. It's really nice. You go through that duty-free shop. You almost want to stay, right? But you know you got to keep going. You go through pulling the suitcases and you go through, and then you have to scan the bags. You have to go to the Jordan passport desk, stamp the passports, and enter Jordan and go out to the bus. Well, it's one thing if you do this with backpacker little thing, but when you do it with 140 people all toting their suitcases, some are, and I don't know about you, okay, here's the thing, but my observation, okay, the people who can least have the least capacity to pull a 26-inch, 50-pound suitcase is the person who has two of them. And a shoulder bag. And it's like, what are you, the bag lady? You know what I mean? Bag. And it was like, and it never fails, okay? And Charles says to me, Frank, next time we got to do better at telling him. I says, it doesn't do any good, Charles. You can say till you're blue in the face. They won't change. Those people are still those people, okay? They're lovely. They're nice. They're converted. They got God's spirit, I think. No, I'm teasing. Okay. No, they're really wonderful. And we had, but the border crossing. So on border crossing day, it's Ecclesiastes 7. Here's what our role on our side of the logistics fence is on a border crossing day. 7:8. Ecclesiastes 7:8, it says, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. Actually, I didn't think that was the joke part, but that is pretty good. I guess we built that up really good. You guys get it. Okay. The patient is in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Okay? You don't get to tell the inspection officer it doesn't matter. Okay? My role is to make sure that nobody opens their mouth. Just follow the directions. They're going to scan it. They're going to look through it. Yes, just keep going. And my job is to be, our job is to be present. So I go through first. Valerie's with me. We take her up. She gets her passport stamp. She goes out to the bus to make sure everybody's on, you know, the team is out there. Okay, fine. And now my job is to reassure everybody, oh, yes, this is exactly how it's supposed to go. Yes, it's supposed to take this long. Yes, really. It's not that bad in 110-degree temperatures out there, is it? No, it's only been 3 hours. No, it happens this way all the time. Okay, so you have to remain calm. And if you can keep them calm, then you get through and you can go. A little quiet reflection is, as we got into Wadi Rum that night, to stay out in the tents and the beautiful, beautiful desert of Wadi Rum, and it reminds you of Canyonlands or something here in the West, just beautiful flat, these beautiful big red buttes and stuff out of the desert. And I got up in the morning and I was going up to do something early and no sunrise. It was just as black as it was midnight. And I all of a sudden hear, morning, Frank. It was Dave Dobson from Alaska. And Dave was not wanting to disturb the quietness of the morning either. And we shared this quiet mental connection because he'd given a wonderful sermon about getting outside and being with nature and how it can restore the soul, et cetera. And there he was that morning after we'd left this turmoil of Israel, right, in the desert, just soaking in the star, right, before the sun had come up. And I just think of Dave standing there and just, morning, Frank. And we both felt the same thing. It was just eerily, eerily peaceful. And then the next day, everybody went on into Petra, as they were planning to do, but Valerie and I went to the hotel, and that's where we made, I would say, the other major decision to tell all the people who were flying in El Al that they were not going to get to go back to Tel Aviv, because we had no assurance that they would get into the airport, that they would leave. As I go back through the text messages, I'm asking, consulting Tel Aviv, what do they think, and they're all going, don't bring them, Frank. Just had another bomb scare at the airport, another alert at the airport. Who knows if El Al will be flying in another 24 hours. Don't bring them. And now then we have to go through and find hotel rooms in Amman. How are we going to feed the people that night, et cetera. So as we got back Monday after everybody came back from Petra, we're at two different hotels, and we tell them, everybody's got to go out of Amman. Okay, so we got to convince all the people who were really wanting to go to Tel Aviv to fly on their El Al tickets. You got to buy a new ticket home. Okay, so everybody gathered. We in one hotel, we gathered up the people. We had six or seven young people and other people who could run computers because some people, I didn't get through. Well, let's get them through. And we got everybody ticketed because now we had to arrange for transfers, and we did all that. Next day, we all head north, as we also did that day. We decided the 12 people sitting in Jerusalem, there were actually seven people sitting in Jerusalem who weren't going to go out till Thursday, maybe, and another five, the Keller's family and Tel Aviv, who had been to the airport twice and had gone back, gotten a bed and breakfast, and weren't sure when they would get out. And so I called each of them that Monday afternoon and said, what if we send a bus for you and bring you to Amman tomorrow? And all 12 said, yes. So they showed up at 7:30 in the morning, and then they picked them up in Jerusalem, went on to Tel Aviv, and brought them to the Beit She'an border, and they spent almost 7 hours in the line to get across the border, got them into Jerusalem. And it was, I never did see them because we had the two hotels, got them into the hotel, got them fed down. I'm calling that evening the most expensive shower in history because, I mean, at least half the rooms really never were slept in the whole night. But after everybody's been on the road, you have no choice. Get everybody in a room, give them a hotel, opportunity to shower, change their clothes, and then about 50 people out of the 140 left that night. Others spent the next 24 hours. But in Psalm 107, as I close, one of the things that you can see out of this psalm is there's these whole sections, and you can break it up into peril, prayer, redemption, and response, and how God handles things. There's these four areas, and you know, in verses 1-3, you see this whole thing of, let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom he's redeemed from the hand of the enemy and gathered out of the lands, from the east and from the west, from the north and from the south. What a wonderful thing. Notice down verse 6, then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. Verse 13, they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. Verse 19, they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. There's the prayer portion of this, right? The peril is there. You know, they, verses 4 and 5, they wandered in the wilderness. Then the people pray. And then what happens? A response comes, like in verse 8. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for his goodness and his wonderful works for the children of men. Or down in verse 21, another response. Oh, men would give thanks to the Lord for his wonderful works to the children of men. Let them sacrifice the sacrifices of thanksgiving and declare his works with rejoicing. And that's what we do at church. We come to espouse that God is true, he's faithful, he's loving kindness, he can see us through. And verse 28, they cry out to the Lord in their trouble. Another prayer. And God says, he redeems them. Notice how in verse 29, he calms the storm so that its waves are still, and then they are glad because they are quiet. So he guides them to their desired heaven. And verse 31, oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord, our response, for his goodness, for his wonderful works to the children of men. Let them exalt him also in the assembly of his people. That's what we do. We assemble to espouse God true and faithful on the Sabbath that he can see us through. I offer this psalm to say that the peril, the prayer, the redemption, the response of God, just as it was for ancient Israel, is true for us today. And it's what we have to teach our children, our families, remind us all in the years ahead. There will be peril, there will be prayer, there will be redemption, and there will be our response. This psalm is just as true then as it was now. Psalm 107, verse 1 says, oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Let the redeemed say so. That's you and me. As my dad would often say, God has been so good to us. My report on 5 days of getting out of harm's way is, let us give thanks to the Lord.